from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Saudi Arabia has again been hailed by the UN Secretary General, this time for what he called its, quote, outstanding generosity, closed quote, in helping to relieve the suffering of the people in Syria. Ban Ki-moon's comments came as he met the king of the Middle Eastern country. Daniel Dickinson reports from the United Nations.
Mr. Ban met Saudi Arabia's King Salman bin Abdul Aziz in Riyadh. They discussed a wide range of issues, including the Arab Peace Initiative, the country's engagement as a member of the Friends of Yemen, and financial support to countries affected by the conflict in Syria. The Secretary General thanked Saudi Arabia for what he called its outstanding generosity. A humanitarian pledging conference for Syria is due to take place in March in Kuwait. The UN chief told reporters after meeting the king that he was profoundly concerned about the appalling crimes that continue to be committed in Syria by all sides. He reiterated his position that a solution to the crisis will only be found through political negotiations. Daniel Dickinson, United Nations.
Most observers say that much of the financing and weaponry in the hands of the various groups fighting the Syrian government have come from Saudi Arabia. Greece's Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras, referring to Nazi Germany's four-year occupation of his country and a forced wartime loan during World War II that saddled the Greek economy with huge debt, wants Berlin to pay reparations. The leader of the anti-austerity Syriza party said Athens had a, quote, historical obligation, closed quote, to claim from Germany billions of euros in reparations for the physical and financial destruction committed during the German occupation of Greece. Tsipras claims Germany owes Greece about 162 billion euros, or $183 billion, about half the country's debt load, which is estimated at over 315 billion euros. His comments resonated far beyond Athens and placed the issue of his country's recent massive bailout at the behest of international creditors in an entirely different light. Beyond the historical obligation, he said, Greece had, quote, a moral obligation to our people, to history, to all European peoples who fought and gave their blood against Nazism, closed quote. He spoke in a keynote address to Parliament on Sunday. As the U.S. media raises the volume of its narrative of Russian aggression in Ukraine, in apparent support of a U.S. move to provide overt support for the Kiev military forces, a series of high-level meetings took place over the weekend seeking to defuse the possibility of a military confrontation between the U.S. and Russia. On Friday, German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President François Hollande met with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow. The German Chancellor arrived in Washington Monday for a summit with U.S. President Barack Obama and spoke at a press conference about the weekend's diplomatic effort.
One particular priority was given to the conflict between Ukraine and Russia this morning. We stand up for the same principles of inviolability of territorial integrity. For somebody who comes from Europe, I can only say if we give up this principle of territorial integrity of countries, then we will not be able to maintain the peaceful order of Europe that we've been able to achieve. And this is not just any old point. It's an essential, a crucial point, and we have to stand by it. And Russia has violated the territorial integrity of Ukraine in two respects, in Crimea and also in Donetsk and Luhansk. So we are called upon now to come up with solutions, but not in the sense of a mediator, but we also stand up for the interests of the European peaceful order. And this is what the French president and I have been trying to do over the past few days. We're going to continue those efforts, and I'm very grateful that throughout the Ukraine crisis, we have been in very, very close contact with the United States of America and Europe on sanctions, on diplomatic initiatives, and this is going to be continued. And I think that's indeed one of the most important messages we can send to Russia and need to send to Russia. We continue to pursue a diplomatic solution, although we have suffered a lot of setbacks. These days we will see whether all sides are ready and willing to come to a negotiated settlement. I've always said I don't see a military solution to this conflict, but we have to put all our efforts in bringing about a diplomatic solution.
She was asked whether there was really a point of divergence between the American and German points of view regarding military aid to Kiev.
Stress that U.S. and Europe need to have cohesion on the issue of sanctions and on dealing with Ukraine. And yet the administration is discussing sending lethal weapons to Ukraine, which is very different from what the chancellor said over the weekend. So I was wondering whether this is a good cop, bad cop act, or is this a real reflection of difference of views on the situation on the ground? And more broadly, if there's no agreement this week, what lies ahead? Are we looking at a broader set of sanctions? What makes us think those set of sanctions will change the Russian president's mind any more than the current ones?
French president and I have decided to make one further attempt to make progress through a through diplomatic means. We have the Minsk agreement. The Minsk agreement has never been implemented. Quite the contrary is true. The situation has actually worsened on the ground. So now there is a possibility to try and bring about a ceasefire and to also create conditions that are then in place where you have not every day civilians dying, civil victims that fall prey to this. And I'm absolutely confident that we will do this together. I myself actually would not be able to live with not having made this attempt. So there is anything but an assured success in all of this. I have to be very clear about this. But if at a certain point in time one has to say that a success is not possible, even if one puts every effort into it, then the United States and Europe have to sit together and try and explore further possibilities what one can do. Just let me point out here that foreign ministers of the European Union last week already tasked the Commission to think about further possible sanctions. On the issue of what is effective and what not, I'm somewhat surprised sometimes. Just let me mention Iran. For a fairly long period of time, we have had sanctions in place there. People don't seem to question them. And I think they have been fairly successful if we look at the current state of affairs, what with the negotiations on the nuclear program. So I think, in parallel, I think it was a very good thing to put some cost on to the Russians through these sanctions that we agreed on, because we see also that Russia seems to be influenced by this. And this is why I am 100% behind these decisions. As to the export of arms, I have given you my opinion, but you may rest assured that no matter what we decide, the alliance between the United States and Europe will continue to stand, will continue to be solid, even though on certain issues we may not always agree. But this partnership, be it on Ukraine and Russia, be it on combating terrorism on the international stage, be it on other issues, is a partnership that has stood the test of time and that is, I mean, in Europe, we're very close, but this transatlantic partnership for Germany and for Europe is indispensable, and this will remain so, and I can say this also on behalf of my colleagues in the European Union.
But the distance separating the view of events in Ukraine and of relations between Russia and the West remains wide. On Saturday, Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, addressed the Munich Conference on Security and laid out his perspective on the crisis in Europe. This is what he said.
We could not agree with those who say that there was a sudden collapse of the world order. Rather, the recent developments have corroborated our warnings about deep systemic issues in European security and international relations at large. Let me remind you of the speech by President Putin made here 8 years ago. The construct of stability based on United Nations Charter and the Helsinki Principles have been undermined by the United States and their allies in Yugoslavia, in Iraq, in Libya. It was undermined by NATO's enlargement to the east, by new divided lines. The common European home was not built because our Western partners were not guided by interest to build a common security architecture, but by illusions, dreams to be winners in the Cold War. The commitments made as part of OSCE and NRS, commitments to consider each other's securities, were ignored. The missile defense is proof of destructive moves and disregard of other states' interests. Our proposals on missile defense were rejected. Instead, we were recommended to join the American Global Missile Defense System under Washington scenarios, which entails real risks for Russian nuclear deterrence forces. Any actions undermining strategic stability entails countermeasures, thereby long-term damage is
of international conventions and treaties in the area of security, where missile defense plays a key role. We don't even understand what is the reason behind this obsession of the U.S. to create a global missile defense system. What is it? Achieving global domination, global superiority. In any way, in the Euro-Atlantic region, we now have a strong irritant, and it will take a long time for us to get rid of it. But we are ready to do that. Another destabilizing factor is the step by the United States and other NATO members, their decision not to ratify the CFE treaty, Conventional Forces in Europe treaty. And every time they try to blame Russia, for example, recently there has been a lot of talk about INF, intermediate nuclear forces. Specialists are well aware of what the United States have been doing, their actions that goes against the spirit and letter of this document. For example, as part of creating the global missile defense system, Washington came up with target missiles, which are very close to the intermediate range missiles forbidden by the INF treaty. Also, the drones used by the United States are very close to the description included in the INF treaty. Also, launchers, which will soon be deployed in Romania and Poland, are also banned by the treaty because they can be used to launch intermediate-range missiles. By refusing to admit these facts, our American partners say they have complaints about Russia and its violation of the INF treaty, but they don't offer any specific facts. Considering these facts and other facts, we cannot limit the current crisis to what happened last year. We think this would be dangerous. We think it's just the culmination of what has been happening in the last 25 years. Our Western partners have been pursuing the policy of preserving their global domination at any cost, expanding to CIS countries, our closest neighbors, countries that have centuries-long ties with Russia, economic, political, all kinds of ties, even family ties. They were faced with a choice. Either they go with the West or they're against the West. This is the zero-sum mentality that we thought we wanted to leave in the past. The European Union has opted for confrontation instead of cooperation. Remember the missed opportunity, what Angela Merkel suggested in Baselberg, her initiative about setting up a committee, a EU-Russia committee. for where foreign ministers would work. This idea was supported by Russia, but it was rejected by the European Union. Whereas having such a mechanism would allow us to address current problems and address each other's concerns. As regards Ukraine specifically, unfortunately, at every stage of this crisis, our U.S. partners and European colleagues followed them, took steps that escalated the situation. This happened when the European Union rejected the idea to discuss with Russia the consequences of implementing the economic section of the association agreement. Later, they supported the coup, and prior to that, they supported anti-government riots. This happened again when our Western partners failed to blame people in Kyiv who started what they call an anti-terrorist operation against their own population, spearheaded by nationalist movements. It's hard for us to understand why many of our colleagues failed to apply to Ukraine the principles of internal conflict resolution, which require inclusive political dialogue between antagonists. For example, in Yemen, Mali, South Sudan, our partners always recommend that the government should talk to the opposition, to the rebels, sometimes even to extremist groups. But as far as Ukraine is concerned, they do something different. They justify the use of banned weapons in certain cases. Unfortunately, our Western partners turn the blind eye to everything the Kyiv authorities do, including xenophobia and so on. Well, let me give you a quote. Ukrainian national socialists regard the Ukrainian nation as a racial entity, and in 3 to 6 months this matter will be resolved firmly with determination. This is a speech given by the commander of the Azov regiment involved. They're talking about ethnic cleansings in Ukraine, elimination of Russians and Jews, and many other people who are now in the Ukrainian government, including Yarosh Tegnibok and the leader of the radical party, Mr. Leshko, who is currently the member of the parliament, a member of the parliament. There was no reaction from Western capitals to their statements. I don't think Europe can afford to ignore the threat of neo-Nazi tendencies spreading in Europe. The Ukraine crisis cannot be resolved through military means. We saw this last year when the situation on the built forced the parties to sign the Minsk Accords, and we see this again today when attempts to achieve a military victory failed. And nevertheless, we hear voices from the West encouraging the Ukrainian authorities to militarize the country, send weapons to Ukraine. Such plans can only make the situation worse in Ukraine. Russia will continue pressing for peace. We have been consistently in favor of ceasing hostilities, starting direct talks with Donetsk and Lugansk, and rebuilding the common economic space while maintaining Ukraine's territorial integrity. These are the goals that all the initiatives by Vladimir Putin were addressing, including the Normandy format and yesterday's talks between the leaders of Russia, France, and Germany in the Kremlin. As you know, these talks will continue. We think that there is an opportunity to achieve positive results and to coordinate recommendations that will allow the parties to resolve this conflict situation. It is important for everybody to realize how great risks are in this situation. situation. We should not consider each problem separately. We need a comprehensive view. The world is taking a drastic turn today because one era is replacing another. We see growing conflicts around the world. Instead of strategic view, if instead of strategic view, politicians start to take decisions motivated by their short-term goals and their current political situation at home, we'll see more and more dangers evolve. As you remember, in Syria, some recommended not paying too much attention to the threat of terrorism, and we all see what happened now. There is a vast territory in the Middle East and Northern Africa that are no longer controlled by legitimate authorities, and extremist groups go to other regions, including Europe. And there is greater risk now of WMD proliferation. The situation in the Middle East settlement and other regional conflicts is becoming more and more dangerous. And there is no strategy to address the situation. I hope that discussion here in Munich today and tomorrow will bring us closer to realization how we can all address this threat, this situation. Of course, it has to be without ultimatums, without threats, working together. It would be much better for us to address this situation if major players would agree about strategic benchmarks in their relations. Recently, the president of the French Academy, Mr. Dankos, whom I greatly respect, said that real Russia cannot exist without Russia. We would like to know if our partners share this point of view or they want to continue with their policy of dividing Europe and contrasting different parts of Europe and whether they want to build security together with Russia or against Russia. And of course, our US partners have to answer the same question as well. We have long suggested starting building common economic and cultural space from Lisbon to Vladivostok based on the principle of indivisible security that would include members of unions and countries that are not members of such unions. And we need reliable mechanisms for the Eurasian Economic Union and the European Union to work together. We welcome support that we see from responsible European leaders for this idea. This year, Russia suggests that the Paris Charter and the Helsinki Act should be reinforced, and the entire Euro-Atlantic region should be follow the principles of respecting each other's interests. And we also welcome the group of wise men set up by the OSCE that is supposed to provide some recommendations and help us find consensus. As we mark the anniversary of World War II, we should be aware of the responsibility that lies on all of our shoulders. Thank you.
Foreign Minister Lavrov, thank you very much for the statement. Foreign Minister has agreed to take some questions. We have a bit of time. I have already received two cards with two questions, and we'll take those first and then call on the next colleagues. Just give me a chance to call up the first one. The first one was Joe Joffe, whom I'm going to ask, where is he? Whom I'm going to ask his question himself.
Mr. Foreign Minister, I understand all the problems that you mentioned that you had with the United States, such as on the CFE or on the missile defense. Apart from the fact that, or on the INF treaty, where you think that drones are like cruise missiles. I understand these problems, though I would add as a footnote that Obama finally took down, essentially, the European missile defense system. What I don't understand is, if you have problems with the United States, why did you make the Ukraine pay for it? By taking Crimea and being well on the way to annexing or splitting Ukraine. What did the poor Ukrainians do that you punish them for the malfeasance of the United States.
Well, of course, you have a very distorted mind. I'm aware of that. We're talking about apples and oranges. What I was saying is that, let's resolve the Ukraine crisis and the entire security system will start working all by itself. No, it's vice versa. Of course, we need to address the crisis. This is our utmost priority, but we also cannot ignore the fact that all the agreements we had after the end of the Cold War, they're not observed. So we are not interested in having revenge on someone, especially doing harm to one country to spite another one. No, it's not like that. And it was not Russia who withdrew from the missile defense treaty. So now, little by little, we need to at least preserve what we have left. And we need to reaffirm the Helsinki principles and finally come to an agreement about the common security system where everybody would feel comfortable. Ukraine, Georgia, Moldova, all the countries that are facing, that our American partners make face with a choice of whether going with the West or being. And I know that U.S. ambassadors, that's the kind of instructions they receive from Washington. I see Alexander Veshbo sitting here just recently. Recently, he gave an interview and he said that NATO is the most peaceful bloc in the world and actually this is the cornerstone of European stability and security. Well, who bombed Yugoslavia, let me ask you, who bombed Libya in violation of UN Security Council resolution? So these kind of unilateral steps, how effective they are, we can see this in the Middle East right now. We think that NATO should not be an exemplary entity, as some people want to make it look. No, it should be an equal partner in the security process. What's wrong with that? Do you want all the other countries to admit that they're inferior compared to the United States and NATO? I don't think so. What happened in Ukraine, just recently, President Obama said openly that the United States brokered the power transition process. So, well, this is very modest of him because we know what actually happened and who discussed, who had telephone conversations and openly had discussions what kind of people should be in the new Ukrainian government and what is happening today, who monitored the situation on the Independence Square. Our military was not there. Our military experts were not there. So we really want the Ukrainian people to restore the unity of Ukraine, but this can only happen based on a nationwide dialogue. And when the central authorities, like they did recently, decide to celebrate the birthday of Bandera and Shuhevich as a national holiday, or the day that the insurgency army, Ukrainian insurgency army, was established, how can Eastern Ukraine celebrate this kind of dates? And Western Ukraine no longer wants to celebrate Victory Day. This alone requires some kind of a political agreement. Probably some people here are ashamed of mentioning this, but we know that there is a mobilization campaign happening in Ukraine right now, and Hungarian, Romanian minorities feel being discriminated, and Hungarians and Armenians are conscripted much more often than ethnic Ukrainians. We should also address this issue. There are other minorities living in Ukraine. Why cannot they have equal rights with others? I know that when during the parliamentary election, Hungary, the Hungarian minority, asked to rearrange election districts in such a way that at least one Hungarian would make it into the parliament. But eventually not one ethnic Hungarian made it into the parliament. And the West ignores all these problems. I talked to them about the lustration law. When you talk to people one-on-one, they all say it's a terrible law, but why don't you say this publicly? Well, they say that we need to support the Ukrainian authorities. We shouldn't criticize the Ukrainian government at this point. So what can you say in this kind of situation? So I think what the presidents of France, Russia, and the German chancellor did yesterday, I think this will be productive, and I hope that conflict parties will support this initiative, and this will help us pacify the situation and start a nationwide dialogue in order to address all sorts of issues in Ukraine, social, economic, political, and so on.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.